11 o'clock live, AM 7:30. It is 12 minutes past the hour, a Tuesday edition of the program. One of the things we like to get into sometimes is politics, and boy, you can make some interesting conversation these days. A lot of things going on. We've even seen in New Mexico recent events looking for Senate seats and congressional district seats as everybody's trying to position themselves already. Even on the national scene, as we saw Monday, the president put out his information via the Internet that he's going to seek re-election. I think nobody was surprised by that. We kind of knew that was going to happen. But what about everything else going on? And Curtis Greco, who is with the Imperfect Messenger, I'll just say it that way, theimperfectmessenger.com or the Imperfect Messenger Foundation on Facebook. And Curtis has some ideas on that as well. Curtis, good to have you with us today.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Well, you know, there's so many places I could jump in on this one because there's a lot going on. But let's just say, as we begin to look toward 2012, what are some of the most important things you think we ought to look for the next couple of months?
Well, there's two critical things that's taking place out there in the political firmament, and that is there's a huge strategic battle being waged on the political level, and that has to do with the issue of the budget and the correlative issues that relate to the economy, that clearly neither party is being able to, or maybe even more critically, perhaps may not be willing to want to tackle, for two critical reasons. One is the political fallout of actually doing a legitimate and strategic response, and two, the other may be waiting for the opposing party to make a move to try to outmaneuver them, which is another point that is related to all of this, is what the folks should be paying close attention to, is how our government has become more a political organization than it has an effective form of governance. When you have policies of politics taking center and front stage over and above the more critical affairs of a nation in desperation for leadership.
You have got some great points in that. There's so much we could jump into there. Because I've noticed the same thing. In fact, we've talked about this earlier today on the program, that even when the Democrats had control of both the House and Senate, back in October of last year, they were not able to do something with the budget. And now when we have a split between the House and the Senate, we're still not able to deal with this. It seems that there really are much more politics involved than a real desire to head the nation in the right direction.
Absolutely. And you make it your comment has an element of precision in it that is lost largely in the media. And as a result of it, the public is made largely unaware of it. And that goes to this point that we touched on briefly, and that is the process of politics, this idea of partisanship. And when we look out over the election cycle, here's what we see happening. We see Obama, as you mentioned in your lead-in, has clearly drawn his line in the sand and says, yes, I'm in for 2012. You have the Republican, the GOP response, which is really not to stand behind any particular candidate, but to move directly to assail the president's failures, which clearly he has many of them.
Right.
But also, you have a very fluid regiment of would-be candidates, none of which really are able to stand or to appear as a standout. For example, Michelle Bachmann, Haley Barbour from the current governor of Mississippi. Even John Bolton, the former ambassador of the United Nations, has talked about the idea of throwing his hat in the ring. And then, of course, you've got Scott Brown, the senator who has taken up the spot formerly held by Teddy Kennedy. You have Jeb Bush, another one of the Bush family who's out there, the former governor of Florida that's playing. Herman Cain, who was the former CEO of, the pizza
Godfather's
chain.
Godfather's Pizza, yeah.
Godfather's Pizza.
Right.
You had Chris Christie, Mitch Daniels, Jim DeMint, Newt Gingrich, and so on and so forth. Nobody is really able to capture the public's attention with any real element of clarity that can lure or attract the public and address the great concern that the public truly has that no one has latched onto.
Well, there you're getting to something I think is very interesting because – there are some names. We talked about this the other morning on the morning program, and you mentioned some names I didn't think of. But there's so many people, but nobody really has come up with a plan. It seems that it's a lot of this chess game going on, moving pawns here and there, to seeing waiting for somebody else to make a mistake first.
Yeah, and isn't that ironic? I mean, that is a great tragedy of American politics, and this goes back to about a year or so ago when I was in front of a group in Ohio, and there was talk about the Tea Party, and a lot of folks kind of were a little taken back, thinking that I was a very strong Tea Party supporter. And not that I'm not a strong Tea Party supporter, but what my problem are, and all of our problems should be focused around, is a fundamental flaw in the argument. We are building we have built a political system that is based on a false premise. And so consequently, what we see with the Tea Party, and will continue to plague the Tea Party, is that what you see in the political firmament in the United States is this illusion that we are either left or right. We are either left or right or centrist. Americans are neither left or right. Americans are not centrist. The illusion that has been promulgated out there is that Americans are largely centrist. And so what do you see happen? You see the politics of left or right attempting to orientate themselves to attract the most populous segment of the voter, and that is the centrist. So what you really get is a bastard view of what becomes a political organism and why we have such utter failure in the system. And that is why. Because the system doesn't orientate itself to a functional response. It orientates itself to maintain a political form. And what you get is what we see today, and that is not the ability of the government to act on critical issues, but in effect, favor to act only in a mechanism that preserves political standing, the dominance of one or the other party.
Right.
And so the philosophy that the issue that I made about the Tea Party was, and it went something like this. I said the great risk that Americans face today is to preserve a fundamental argument, not one that is of a philosophical nature, but one that is based on the fundamentals of sound governance. So you can create these Tea Parties, and you can create left-center and right-center and center-center and all these different acronyms that seem to capture this notion of what do Americans want. Well, I'll tell you what Americans want. Americans are neither left or right. They are not centrists. What Americans are in search of a political process or in search of a government, a concept of governance that is true to our Republican form, and in essence, what Americans are looking for is representation.
Well, I'm going to ask you a tough question in regards to that, Curtis, because this is what I'm seeing, is that we have been hearing so often in the media that it's right or left, and like you said, it's centrist, and what you want to do is you want to move to the center. How would Americans really recognize if we got back to something that was really true as to what our democracy was built on? Because we have redefined it so many different times in so many different ways. How would we know it if we saw it?
And that's an excellent point. Excellent, because this goes back to my comment where I said we've built a system on a false premise. And here's the false premise, that it is a political system, and that is not what it is. It is a form of government whose single and solitary purpose is to preserve and protect your sovereign rights of self-determination and not to orchestrate them. Okay. And I put it this way in a recent posting that appeared on the Facebook page, on my Facebook page, and it said something along these lines. It's a sort of a twisting of a segment of one of the quatrains from Omar Khayyam's writings, and it goes like this. It says, "In the marketplace one dusk of day, I watched the potter thumping his wet clay, and with its all obliterated tongue it murmured, gently, brother, gently pray." And so the point of that is, in Omar Khayyam's commentary, what he's observing is the potter and the clay. And the clay is asking of the potter for his most inspired action. Why? Because what does a potter do with the clay? It shapes what the clay is ultimately to become. And so the clay, by its very nature, is begging for the best possible divine inspiration. So he's saying to the potter, pray for guidance, pray for inspiration. Make me into the best possible pot you can make, Mr. Potter.
Wow.
And what is this significant, and why is this comment relevant to our country and to each and every one of us? And that is this. I believe that the divine inspiration that is the essence of those things we hold to be true is for the first time in all of human history where the connection between governance and divine providence was asserted when it said, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator. And on it goes, right?
Right.
And here's the point as it relates to the election process and this false premise and what the public needs to start finally getting back to and in the process attempt to answer your question, which is, would we know it, right? Can we recognize it? And this is frankly one of the things that is, the, in effect, the very essence of what I do, and that is to basically message this concept of bringing people back to the understanding that government's purpose is not to enforce upon you the interpretation of what the government deems to be freedom and liberty. No. What it's there for is to assure that your sovereign right to determine what it is your freedom and liberty is and how you express it to the extent that it doesn't impair another's ability to do the same. And that's one of these great issues of why, for example, when you look at Mr. Representative Ryan's today released their new bill that he's pitching as the next great salvation of the country and his path to prosperity. What you should be doing and will be doing, I'm sure, and your audience should be doing, and they should, is to look closely at what the path to prosperity does. This is the slicing and the preparation in nice, nifty little slices of what will become the great political conflict that will lead into the 2012 election, and that is these false premises. And all of these false premises lead up to a reinterpretation of what constitutes your sovereign rights of self-determination. And it deals with much of the same type of stuff. You know, he's not going at it from the standpoint of the highest and best possible. They're approaching it in a strategic way to draw out the president to show his flaws, to show his weaknesses, to try to build this consensus of the so-called left of center and right of center so that people simply go to the ballot box thinking, again, what we continue to be pummeled with, and that is this issue of the lesser of two evils.
Well, Curtis, yeah, and you're getting into something here that really opens up a lot of things, because suddenly we're talking, to really do this, we're going to need a whole new kind of candidate.
Well, yes, but more importantly, I think what we all need to start questioning is not whether or not we recognize government or that we recognize the right candidate. What I think the bigger question and the more appropriate question is whether or not there is a candidate out there that recognizes and is able to express the fundamental truths of what constitutes a Republican form of government. And that's the bigger question, because in essence, when you go to a tire store, isn't it appropriate that you expect that your salesman's going to sell you a set of tires? Of course. You don't go in there thinking that a guy's going to sell you an open-heart surgery, right? When you go into the political arena, you should never expect a political organism to offer you anything but a political statement or one that compels a political response. I have a saying, it says, the great risk to a politician is to talk about something that is of substance, because doing so will render them speechless. Right?
Yeah, true.
Because why? If you look at what politicians do, their great mechanism is to draw the public into a conflict and then ceremoniously offer themselves as a solution.
Exactly. Marketing, basically, is what's going on.
Well, yes. I mean, and the false premise is the phrase I use to try to alert folks to a different way of thinking, to a different concept that says, instead of asking or responding to a political set of circumstances, what I think we ought to be doing is getting back to what it is that made this country a functional, not only a functional economic system, but also a functional political and government concept. And to do that, we actually have to step back in time almost to the time of Andrew Jackson, and maybe even Abraham Lincoln, I think, but certainly before the 1900s and the Woodrow Wilson progressive ideologies that gave us the Federal Reserve Bank, to really get to a state where the U.S. was beginning to really feel its own as a government concept of republicanism, and it lasted a very short period of time before the system, before the vested interests, or I shouldn't say vested interests, interests that understood that the best way to control an outcome in the Republican system is to not, in fact, allow it to be a representative government, but in fact to polarize it. And that gave rise to this concept of partisan politics, which, by the way, Jefferson always warned us. Benjamin Franklin warned us, and James Madison warned us, and John Adams in the Federalist Papers warned posterity that the great risk to Republican government was the greater risk that the interests adverse to the will of the people would ultimately take over the process. And what we would be left with was not a version of freedom at all, but only the choices made available. And I think it's time we change that.
I think you're right. But the question is changing it. Curtis, one of the areas I've seen, and I have dealt with a lot of folks with the Tea Parties and whatnot, it seemed to me, at least in some point, that the Tea Party was kind of headed in this direction to come back to say, let's fundamentally come back and redefine it to say this is really what it is meant to be. It's the individual freedom. The government's there to ensure those God-given rights, not to redefine them or determine the way they ought to be, but to say, we want you to experience it, to discover it. Are there any party movements? Does the Tea Party have that potential to come back and bring that about?
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that what we need to remember about our founding fathers was that though they were of different minds, they still managed to converge upon a common ideal. The problem that we face in this country from a political and sort of in the goal to reconstitute our republic is to remember that you cannot bring to the table of an ideal variations of what constitutes the ideal.
Yeah.
Right? There is only one ideal, right? And the question, and always what happens in this in our contemporary environment is that the table gets cluttered with issues that are not issues of governance. For example, entitlements. This is one of those false premises. People are entitled to retirement. People are entitled to Medicare. People are entitled to housing. People are entitled to food stamps. All of these concepts of entitlement that though we may feel compelled on an individual basis to care for our fellow man, we've allowed, and under the belief that somehow we have washed our hands, as Pontius Pilate would say, mm-hmm. of an issue, simply by passing it off to the government, this illusory concept that we have now resolved it because government's got it handled, we fail to remember that the only thing that government has to give, it first acquires by taking from someone else.
True.
Government, by its nature, has no thing to give. It has no value. It has no abstract notions of wealth that it can draw upon, unless, of course, you think of the Federal Reserve and its uncanny ability to print money out of thin air. But the reality is even with the Federal Reserve having unchecked ability to fund these escapades, whether domestically or foreign, the ultimate reality is it still comes back to the public in the form of debt. There's no free ride. And
well,
so
when
folks...
Yeah. Okay, you have touched on something here that I think is absolutely essential, because what we're seeing is the battlegrounds over Medicaid, Medicare, entitlements, the budget, the deficit. All of those are the issues that tend to be the polarizing agents, but they're a symptom of the problem.
Absolutely, and this goes back to our question or the subject of the 2012, let the games begin.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what you're going to see and what the public's going to start getting waged into, what the folks are going to, all of us are going to be compressed into this argument that somehow it's polarizing, that somehow you have Mr. Obama on the left and whoever the presidential candidate will be on the right. And the question will ultimately be drawn down to this. Mr. Obama wants to continue spending to provide you all the entitlements you've been accustomed to receiving, and we're going to tax the so-called rich whoever the so-called rich is. I'm not quite certain who that is, by the way.
Right, I hear that.
And or you're going to go to the Republican who's going to say, vote for me because we're going to fix the entitlement system. We're going to fix government, right? But what they won't tell you and what you won't hear is that the reason these entitlement programs exist and the economic chaos that is all of us are struggling through and will for quite some time is the direct result of the Democrat-Republican political mechanism.
Wow.
I mean, none of the, Mr. Roosevelt was the one who gave us Social Security, Democrat.
Right.
President Kennedy gave us government collective bargaining, Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Johnson gave us Medicaid and Medicare,
right.
Democrat. Mr. Carter gave us the Community Reinvestment Act, Democrat. Mr. Clinton brought us the reinvention of the financial system that gave us the roots of the meltdown that took place in 2008, again, a Democrat. So my question, I try to stick away from the issue of politics as far as Democrats bad, Republicans good, because frankly, I don't think it's relevant. They're both interfering with your God-given rights of self-determination by reinventing the argument that puts Americans at each other's throats based on false premises instead of Americans joining under the common ideal and fighting the true enemy, which are those interests, those divisive intentions that would put you at odds with your fellow American and not against the true cause of the conflict.
Mm.
I mean, Sun Tzu, in his writings in The Art of War, writes an entire series of treaties based on one fundamental premise. And the fundamental premise is, before entering battle, before entering conflict, first determine who it is that's your enemy.
Wow, great point, yes.
And so when we look at this over the next couple months and in the next year into 2012, and back to the question of the Tea Party that you asked me, which I didn't quite finish answering, and that was, to your question is there a viable alternative? Absolutely. But what's going to have to require, and my advice to the Tea Party movement and any of the third-party movements, is we first have to get back to what the fundamental ideal is and start to re-educate Americans that without the notion and understanding and each of us signing on to the common ideal, we're going to continue to fracture our intentions. You know, if in the clarity of intention is imperative, that we first realize that if we are not all marching to the same tune, then we're all marching in opposite directions.
Wow.
And there is never clarity of outcome of purpose and intention if there isn't first clarity as to what it is that binds all of us together. And I believe that, you know, I did a talk, I think it was a week or so ago, and a man came up to me afterwards, and I had made a comment about the distinctions of freedom and liberty because I have a statement that I use and I close most of my writings with, and it says this: man must be free for independence to be at liberty to be expressed. In other words, another way of expressing it is another quote of mine, and it says, we are forever labored by the unknown good intrusive government silences.
Wow, that's good.
And when you understand what those mean, what we understand is really the divine intention that is cloaked, that embraces all of divine intention's design. And that is that we are here to, in effect, do two things. We are here as an extension of divine providence to create and inspire. If you are not free to express your divine intention, then creation and inspiration are not able to occur. If you are not free to pursue, for example, if Jonas Salk was not free to pursue his research, we would never have had the polio vaccination.
Very true.
If Louis Pasteur was not free to express his creative intention, we would not have the pasteurization process, and so on and so forth. And so when you think of those two items, and then I repeat that last quote of mine, which is, We are forever burdened by the unknown good intrusive government silences. Now we understand the great conflict that lies in front of us in addressing our political conflicts, and that is, unless we converge upon the common ideal, then we're never going to attenuate to a perfect outcome.
And, you know, right there, Curtis, we began to see why America is suffering the concerns that she is, the lack of productivity and those things, because the more we move in this direction, the more this becomes problematic. And, wow, you hit right on it. I suddenly see how all these things fit together. It is a much bigger issue and something I hope Americans can get a hold of as we head into 2012, that we've got to come back to that one attenuating point really is to say we've got to get back to allowing the freedom the way the Creator intended it and not the way somebody defines it.
Yeah, without question. You know, one of the great beauties of the United States and is for all of us to sit back and recall what was going on in the world in the 1700s.
Yeah.
The ability for the U.S. to have developed into this concept of self-governance in the way it did is to be best understood in the concept and context of probability and outcome. The probability that 6 degrees of separation concept, that all of these events would merge at a time, in a very short period of time, to trigger a kinetic response that gave us the Declaration of Independence and ultimately the Constitution of the United States, the precision of which is best understood in the context of their simplicity. 20-page document, the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only 20 pages. The pure brilliance of their work is evident that even an idiot could run a government.
That's true.
I mean, that's how perfect these documents are. But it's also interesting to remember how the divisiveness of influences create and derail, which I invite folks, your audience, and if you have time, the recent article that I've written that was published just a few days back that's on the website is the easiest way to catch it. And that is called – it's a really kind of a typical title for me. It's called All Aboard Destination Misdirection. You know, it's a great – it's not a particularly long article, but it gets to these points of how divisiveness is used to derail outcome. And it's done very easily and it's done very simply, and largely because of a compliant media and political process, the public is really just simply not made aware of it. It's not that the public is stupid. We're not stupid people. Unfortunately, we're busy people. And we have a certain element of faith in the reliance that the information we're being given through our so-called independent press is indeed accurate.
Yeah.
When in fact it's not.
Wow. I'll just direct folks there, Curtis, because I've got to continue to move forward today. But you've made some points, I think, that absolutely we've got to consider as we look at 2012. It's a lot more than who's running and what the issues are. It really is about getting back to that fundamental thing. And like I said, all aboard for misdirection, I tell you what.
Absolutely.
That's the key of it. The website is theimperfectmessenger.com, or on Facebook it is the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. Either way, folks can read your work there and find out more about you, interact with
absolutely.
You as well.
Absolutely. Jim, thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you. You give me the opportunity to run down the road on critical subjects and critical points, and you're just an incredible host, and I'm grateful for you, but more importantly, your audience should be grateful for you, because these are conversations that need to be had, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
I'm glad we have the chance to do it. I enjoy them, and I think we have a chance to really dig at some of the issues that are not being expressed. Curtis, and you'll bring them out. I appreciate that. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. All the best to you and yours.
All the best to you, too. Thank you, sir.
Take care.